Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to the Cricket Collective. I'm John Norman alongside Steve Harmison, bringing you a full review of England's T20 series with South Africa, which you heard exclusively live on TalkSport 2. And as you now know, England took the series and did so in style. And over the next hour, you'll hear from all the players of the match, the captain, hear highlights of the action and get the thoughts of Steve Harmison. So much to chat about today, and this is the Cricket Collective.
Pamela in to Milan, who's listening to the conversation because he has bopped that over long on for six.
There's one.
Well, there's one of them.
You know what would be the thing now?
94 right. Now. 94 for Daoud Malan. England need, what, six runs to win? And Malan needs six for 100. So Pamela in. And Malan digs it out. It will be filled in an extra cover. There's been a fumble. There's a chance he can come back with two. But Butler, Josh Butler, has run all the way through the crease. It's a low-key end to what has been anything but a low-key run chase from England. Daoud Malan finishes 99 not out. England have chased down the target of 192 by 9 wickets for the loss of just Jason Roy.
So, Harmy, wow, what a game that was in the end. I tell you what, for parts of South Africa's innings, the first 10 overs, the pitch just didn't seem to be offering the batsmen much. And then, of course, Russie van der Dussen and Faf du Plessis came to the crease and, you know, hit the ball to all parts. And at the halfway stage, you're thinking, that's a good score. But after England got on it, you realise that it wasn't a good score. Actually, South Africa should have had those two batsmen playing higher up the order. But even if they got 220, I'm not sure that would have been defendable. Such was the brilliance of Malan, who finished with 99 not out, and also Josh Butler, who Malan outscored for the entirety of the innings. But on the flip side, from a South African perspective, the gulf between the two sides and the way South Africa's bowling disintegrated in the last five overs will be a huge concern to South Africa. But let's start with England first. And David Malan, who continues to confound all expectations. What an innings from him, and what consistency in the shortest format of the game playing for England.
Absolutely, John. And yes, it was, I think it was a fascinating game. When you're right, when you look at it, you're thinking, right, it's not a bad total at halfway. But there were alarm bells, a little alarm bells in that first innings that we spoke about. I remember being on commentary speaking about it and talking about how up at Paul, when the day game, when the ball just sitting in the pitch, and when it cut the night comes in and the lights go on and the dew factor, does it help the batting? Well, actually, I think you got an answer to the positive there, that I actually think when the lights really took effect, it made it easier for batting. The ball came onto the bat a little bit. It didn't really sit in. And I think that was more or less halfway through the South African innings. When you look back at the South African innings, you could be critical of England. I actually think all 38 overs of the match, I don't think the bowling was at its top level as what the batting was. I thought, you know, when they were going for the wide Yorkers, they were wide, but they were in this. The lengths weren't great. They were in the slot. There wasn't many Yorkers. Absolutely nailed, and there was some big hits, some big sixes, and players had been able to get their hands free. So I don't think the bowling was as a high level as what the batting. But when you look at it, South Africa got 84 off the last five overs, and I was very critical at halftime about the way England had bowled at the death. And you're right, South Africa, two batsmen could have come up a little bit higher in the order. That's something that they'll probably look at. But the way England came out and bossed the chase was just phenomenal. I thought Milan was brilliant. He justified his selection. A lot of questions about whether Bairstow should bat three. A lot of questions whether Root players in the side. Could you drop the best player in the world at this minute in time when it comes to the rankings? This kid's played 19 matches now, and his averages and strike rate are phenomenal. And when the way he played, and you know, I think Butler justified his selection up at the top of the order as well, being able to just, you know, take his time. The two of them very, very similar in temperament for me, Milan and Butler. They like to get 5-10 balls into their innings before they really start becoming in destructive mode. And I think there was at one point where Butler actually caught Milan up. I think Butler was 22 off 23 and then over off some, I think it was Sampala. I'm not sure who the over was, but anyway, it went for 20 odd. He managed to get exactly the same. I think Butler was 42 off 29 and Milan was 44 off 23. Then all of a sudden Milan put the afterburners on. And it was a game, set, match. I thought it was a phenomenal batting display by England, a well-thought-out chase. And it proves, you know, why, you know, and it shows why that this team under Owen Morgan can play in any conditions, can play in any on any surface, in any country, and still chase or set and be the best team in the world. And rightly so, they're sitting top of the tree in the 50-over rankings and now in the 2020 rankings. They were absolutely magnificent in this three-match series.
Yeah, absolutely. To the top of the tree in World T20. And what a time to do it. And when we're looking at a World T20 in 2021 in India and then in Australia in 2022. Let's hear from the England camp, though. Neil Manthorpe is our man on the ground and asking the questions.
We've got a great, fantastic squad of 15 guys outside, and winning is always really the priority. And at times, obviously, it's exposure to others. But having everyone here available and in these conditions, wanting to sort of nail down the strongest team for these exact conditions, I thought that was a great way to go for us as a side and get time all together. I think it's really important to build time together as a side. A lot of us have played a lot of T20 cricket, but to play as an 11 for England a year out from the World Cup will stand us in good stead.
Harmy, there were a few groans off air in our commentary box today when England announced the same team, the same 11. We were hoping to see a little bit of a change-up. We were being selfish, essentially. We wanted something different to talk about. Were you surprised that England went in unchanged, especially when you consider, you know, your old mate, you've been quite vocal about Mottwood. I'm not asking you to do that again. But, you know, this guy doesn't have a test contract. He's got a white ball contract. There's two players in this squad who don't have white ball contracts or other team. They played, he didn't. And he's gone a long time without playing for England. Were you surprised? Do you think it was a mistake? But at the end of the day, it does show, doesn't it? This is absolutely Owen Morgan's team and he does what he wants.
Yeah, he does what he wants. I wasn't really shouting for Mark to play in this game as much, because I think Mark's going to play in all three of the 50 over ODIs. So it wasn't so much Mark. I thought Moeen, more than anything else, Moeen Ali. We've got to play Moeen, because we've got to see what sort of mindset he's in. We've got to see what sort of skill sets he's got at this minute in time, because he was at the IPL but didn't really get a game, and he was messed around there. We're potentially going to have to play two, three spinners in January, February, March in Sri Lanka and in India or in the UAE, wherever them cricket's going to be, whether it's the red ball or the white ball. And he's already come out and said he'd be interested to come back into the test team and to be around that. So I'd have liked to have seen Moeen more than anybody else. Rhys Topley might get a game in the 50 overs, but I feel awful having a go at Rhys Topley the other day in the last week's Cricket Collective, because I felt when I came off air, I thought, oh, you've been, that's not right. You were out of order there. You're a bit dismissive of Rhys Topley, probably because of how good this side is, thinking, right, there's only 13 men out there who really are warranting a place in the side. But I thought definitely Moeen Ali should have played in this game. And I think it showed as well when you look at it. And I think the biggest example I can put is when Rashid came off the bowl It was the 13th over. He bowled the 13th over, came off. And all of a sudden, England had to go to the next seven overs of one from Jofra Archer and then six from very, very similar paced bowlers trying to do the same thing, trying to bowl wide yorkers or taking the pace off the ball, bowling back of the hand or cut the slower balls. And all of a sudden, I was thinking, well, if Moeen Ali had been playing, he would have bowled the last over to power play, which is he always does and he does very, very well, which pushes Rashid back to bowling the 15th, the 13th and the 15th or the 14th and the 16th over, which then puts pressure on the opposition. But I think that's where England missed the trick. I still think in the World T20, England are going to need two spinners to bowl in that middle period to really get a hold of the game. And I think we should have seen Moeen Ali play in this game. But you're right. Owen Morgan is the man in charge. He dictates what he wants. And his side is winning is the most important thing. And who am I to argue?
Well, come on, mate. We've still got three sections of the show. So the day you stop arguing about cricket is the day that we all give up.
Because exactly.
There is plenty to argue about. Maybe not today, though, after England have just taken the series 3-0, beating South Africa comfortably by 9 wickets. Darwin Milan ending 99 not out. Joss Butler and himself combining with a terrific partnership for the second wicket that saw England home comfortably. We're going to talk about the game and the series as a whole. A little look ahead to the ODI series as well. You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Meany in once more. Bairstow standing in front of all three stumps.
Shot.
The bat in the air. He has smashed it, smoked it, absolutely crunched it over long on. It's in the building side. England are in front in the three-match series. Johnny Bairstow, take a bow.
You ask for one of your top five to go and put a marker down early in the series and put the pressure on the opposition bowlers. Well, Johnny Bairstow has done that.
I always look at it as I put myself in the opposition shoes, and certainly from my point of view, when I do, we're a side that I would not like to play against.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2, a review of the 3T20 series between South Africa and England, which you heard live and exclusive on TalkSport 2. England winning by some distance in the end. Steve Harmison alongside me for the show. Let's go back to that first T20, Steve, because going into it, there was actually some debate about whether Johnny Bairstow would find himself outside the team because of the emergence of Darwin Milan. And you know, Johnny Bairstow ended up doing what Johnny Bairstow always does in those situations. He scored a match-winning innings.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. I had him out of my side. He wasn't in my first 11 2020 for the simple fact is I thought England would have played the second spinner. I thought they would have played Moeen Ali. I think they've given themselves a bit of a headache when it comes to the World T20 because of they're going to have to play two spinners out in India. It's a given, and I think they've got a decision to make because all of a sudden Johnny Bairstow has put himself in a position which he did in the ODIs 2 years ago when he came in for Alex Hales, where he's now on. You can't drop him. You've got to pick him because whenever Johnny Bairstow's got his back against the wall, he comes out fighting and firing, and he scores runs. So all of a sudden Johnny Bairstow has probably put pressure on Jason Roy.
Let's hear from Johnny Bairstow. He caught up with TalkSport's Neil Manthorpe following the match.
Johnny, well done. It was 34-3, and most teams consider consolidating at that stage, but that's not the way England play their cricket.
No, it doesn't seem to be that way, does it? And I think that's the amazing thing we've got about this group. Like you say, we were 30-3, and we know the strength and depth that we've got in our batting lineup. We know that we can go out and play freely in the way that we want to target certain bowlers, target certain overs, and luckily it was my day today, and I'm delighted.
You've played many such innings for England and for other teams around the world, but there are still some shots that you play and you think, wow, is your game still developing? Are you still learning to hit the ball in different places in different ways?
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it. I think that my game is evolving and improving. I think that I genuinely believe that my best cricket is still ahead of me, because the experiences that you gain from playing in the IPL, which I have done over the last couple of years, will definitely stand me in good stead in white ball cricket, but also playing against different people from around the world, on the highest pressure stages, like in the IPL, like in the World Cups, like in Test cricket, is only going to enhance your game. And look, I feel like I am evolving with my game, and hopefully the form can continue.
Would you like to open, or are you happy at four? Or what about flexibility amongst several of you?
Look, I think that the beauty of our batting lineup is that you could throw six or seven names up in the air, and whatever way they fall, I think that you could walk out in. So whether or not you're batting at four, you're opening, you're batting at six, as long as you're playing in the team, contributing and winning games of cricket for England, that's the main thing, and that's the bit that we're wanting to build towards. Leading into this next World Cup, and that's the first step today.
That was a little message, wasn't it? Just highlighting the fact that he has won a World Cup, hasn't he? He has played in the IPL. Don't drop me, please. But, you know, what he says about a fluid batting order, are we ever going to see that? I know that we have seen on occasion Butler going in ahead of Morgan. Morgan's dropped himself down. Morgan's taken himself out the side. But there's no fluidity in the first three or four positions, is there?
No, I think they're more or less set in stone now, the way they've set up in this. I think the batting order is set in stone now. I don't see any changes now until after the World T20. Morgan has done what he did in the IPL. He basically said, right, I'm going to go and bat number six. He batted six for KKR. He put himself in a position as finisher. I thought he did himself... I didn't think he did himself... I didn't think he did the right thing, should I say, mixed up there, in going down to number six, because I thought number six in the KKR side, he was behind some average players, and he was a lot better player, a batsman, than what was in that KKR side. But he decided that this is what he was going to do. He's going to be the finisher. He's now at number six in a very, very good strong side and a very, very good batting unit who, like Johnny said, you could literally pick six out of her. At the six, you could pick a number out of the hat and say, off you go, well, where you go, and I don't think you'll devalue the team. So I actually think now England are probably going to have to drop a bowler to get Moeen Ali into the team or the second spinner into the team. And the way things have gone, I think Tom Curran's probably the most that's at risk in that. But this batting lineup is just frightening. Absolutely frightening. Jason Roy and Joss Butler at the top. And I think Milan's just proven why he is the world's best 2020 player. And Johnny Bairstow with a point to prove. And he still will have a point to prove come World T20, because there will still be talk of, you know, question marks. Is it the right place for him to play? Should he be in the side? And you know what happens when Johnny's like that. So, you know, this is as good a side as there will be in the world when it comes to the World Cup in, what, 10 months' time?
So England won the first T20 by 5 wickets. A match-winning score of 86 for Johnny Bairstow. But there was also 3 wickets for Sam Curran. Let's hear what he had to say about the benefits of playing in the IPL.
Obviously, I really enjoyed the IPL. I feel like I've taken my game to different standard in terms of my learnings from that tournament. I've definitely taken a lot away from playing with that group and that coaching staff in Chennai. I definitely feel like my game has improved since I went there, and now I'm hoping to just keep trying to improve and hopefully, as you said, become a regular. But for now, I just keep trying to take my opportunities and keep trying to contribute to England.
Do you, by playing the two Currans and Jordan in every single match, is Owen Morgan watching? Can all three of those play in that first T20 against whoever they play in India?
I'm not so sure. I don't think so.
I'm not sure either.
The reason why I say that is when there's an indication up at Pal that the wickets are going to be slow, they're going to be turgid, the ball's going to sit in. Ben Stokes came on and bowled 2 overs for 14. Ben Stokes just bowled, I think he bowled 10 slower balls. He ran his fingers across. Now, all of a sudden, if you've got Ben Stokes, Sam Curran, Tom Curran and Chris Jordan, more or less doing the same thing in that middle period, taking pace off the ball, I think there's just one too many cook there. I think you have to sacrifice one of them, especially to get your... That's where you'd get your spinner in the side. What Moeen Morgan's got, he's got Tom Curran and Chris Jordan bowling at the death. Now, for me, Jofra Archer can bowl at the death. And I mentioned earlier in the show when I talked about at the times when Adil Rashid, for me, is when he's at his best, is just before the onslaught, if there is an onslaught in the last 4 overs of T20 cricket. That 15th, the 14th, 15th, 16th over, that for me is the perfect time for Adil Rashid to finish his spell, because teams are looking to put the foot on the accelerator, looking to put the foot on the gas. And all of a sudden, in this series, Jofra Archer has bowled them overs, where for me, they're the overs Adil Rashid bowls, to try and get a wicket, to try and get a new player in, coming towards the last, the last four overs, the back end of the innings. And Adil Rashid turned the ball both ways. It's very, very difficult to line up and to have a go at. So for me, that is where England should be looking at. That's how I would imagine their game plan would be. And to get to that point, you probably have to sacrifice one of that middle, them three bowlers. And for me, the way things have gone, unfortunately, I think Tom Curran looks the most vulnerable because of how well Sam Curran has lined up over the course of this series.
Yeah, I mean, what about Stokes? Because he didn't bowl in the first T20, but he did bowl one over, I think, in the second, and he bowled a couple today. That is a big moment, isn't it, for England? Because just to have him as an all-rounder, as they do in the other forms of the game, that gives Morgan the capabilities, surely, to go in with two spinners.
Yeah, and I think that's probably what Owen Morgan wants to do, and he's probably gone in without the two spinners in this series because the likelihood of Ben Stokes being fully fit and firing to bowl has been an issue there. I think he's got a little bit of a back problem where I don't think England want to jeopardise getting him injured because of the amount and the volume of cricket that's coming up. I know you're going home after this series, but the last thing you want is to have a back injury lingering for months and months on end. You try and get it fixed and try and get it sorted. And he bowled two overs for 14 up in Paul, and he bowled three overs for 26 today. And today he got two key wickets in that middle period. So showed his experience. Again, I thought he had a quiet series for Ben. You know, there wasn't as much crash, bang, wallop. He got 37 and 16 with a bat. And it's nice when you can win a series and dominate a series without one of your big stars with him having a little bit of a quiet time. So, you know, Ben will be happy with his contribution to the side. But I think also England will be happy that we're not relying on one figure. We're winning series by, you know, with players who are all contributing. So I think that's a positive sign for England.
Are we getting a little bit too ahead of ourselves here, though? Because, you know, in both those first two T20s, I'm not sure England bowled brilliantly throughout.
No,
I'm not saying they didn't bowl well at times, and also, you know, with four overs to go, they needed 50 odd from 24 balls, and just like in the second T20, South Africa served up an absolute horror over just when it looked like they were in control of the game. 28 runs from that Hendricks over, and that ended the contest. England went from needing 51 from 24 balls to 23 from 18. Game over, right? And then in the second T20, similar situation happened. Ngidi this time with a terrible over. I think it was over number 17. I'll check in a second.
Yeah, it was. 20, mid-20s, wasn't it?
England won this series 3-0, and they did so comfortably in the end. But you're not going to be getting away with that in India against one of the big teams, because this South Africa side, you can bring AB de Villiers back into it. They're not coming close on this showing.
No, definitely. I think they are. They're probably another batsman, possibly two batsmen, light, and they need Rabada to stand up and be the bowler that Jofra Archer's been for England even in this series. Even though Jofra only got two wickets and he was pretty quiet today in the two games, the most important games, the ones when the series was alive, he bowled four overs for 28 and four overs for 18. So that's a world leading class bowler, and that's what we think South Africa will be wanting from Rabada. When it comes to England at this moment in time, we talked how well they look with the bat. Do I think England can win the T20 World Cup? Yes, they've got brilliance, and I think moments of brilliance in a quarter-final, semi-final, final and a knockout game can get you over the line, and it could mask everything else that comes with it. At this minute in time, I don't think England's bowling unit is bowling well enough to be for me to say I think England are absolutely shoo-ing. 1-2 odds-on favourites to win the T20 World Cup. They are the best team in the world at this minute in time because of their batting. I think their bowling still needs a little bit to work on, as well as I still think the game plan is not quite there. Owen Morgan wanted and he needed this series to go not only his way, but he needed an idea of the game plans and how he wanted to play to get through, because I don't think he's going to get this group of players again until he gets to India in October.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Over the wicket still to Butler. Butler down the pitch. Swings, misses, and is bowled. Shams into start a new over. Bairstow goes into the leg side. He's got underneath it. Has he got enough of it? No, he hasn't. And England are in real trouble now at 55 for three.
That one's gone straight up in the air. Ben Stokes is going to give a damn because he's out.
Ngidi is into Milan. It's again in the slot. Milan hits it straight back over his head. And it is another T20 International 50. To the number one batsman in the world, David Milan.
I said before, the series, you know, doesn't guarantee me a place in the team. It doesn't guarantee you runs.
Jordan scoops it into the leg side. That'll be the game and the series. Another series victory for Owen Morgan in England's T20 kit.
You can look back at it and feel very proud of coming on again from the Newlands game and executing extremely well on a different ground that asked different questions of us.
You're listening to The Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2, a series review of the three-match T20 series between South Africa and England on TalkSport 2. Myself, John Norman, and Steve Harmison looking back at the series. We'll have a little look ahead to the ODI series, which gets underway on Friday as well. That was a commentary of the second T20. England had won the first one, and they won by 5 wickets. They won the second one by 4 wickets, but a similar situation to the first one. They were in a little bit of strife, and this is the thing with T20 cricket, isn't it, Harmy? I remember covering a game, oh, it must have been about 2006, 2007. Albie Morkel was playing for, was he playing for you guys? Was he playing for Durham?
Oh, but Lancashire.
Was he at Lancashire?
Oh, no, that's right. It was Durham against Lancashire.
He was playing for Lancashire against Durham all the other way around.
No, he was playing for Durham against Lancashire.
That's
right. I remember it well. I was playing.
And it looked like it was Lancashire's game all ends up. And then Albie Morkel came out to bat, and the thing with T20 cricket, you think you're winning a game, and sometimes the speed of the game is so fast, by the time Lancashire realised they were actually losing the game, Albie Morkel had won it for Durham. He just turned it around right at the end, and that kind of happened again in this one. 18 overs in, and 29 needed from 18. I mean, that's still doable, don't get me wrong. But then Milan just smashed, he just went 4-4-6, that was it. It was like, oh, the game's over.
It is, and
I thought it was a nip tucker. It was a low-scoring encounter. No one had really gone top of the bowlers. One horrendous three-ball spell, and it's game over.
And that's what happens in 2020. And you can get in a position, you know, very, very quickly by 4 balls, 5 balls. I remember that game very, very well. I think we chased something like 170 or 180. I actually got 5 wickets in that game. I think it was my best figures. I got away. I think
that's,
I had five.
That's, I was wondering why you remember it so well.
5 for 50, I think. 5 for 45, 5 for 50. I went round the park. It was in a big high scoring game. And we were right behind the 8 ball. And I think he hit 4 sixes in 5 balls. And all of a sudden, we've gone from being no chance of winning to coming in at number 6. Or number, I think you'd have been number 6. And he turned the game and we won at a canter. And I think that's what happened in this game. When you've got wickets in hand, in the longer format, in the 50 over game, and you're trying to build and get to a total, I think when you've got time in the bank, it's, you know, wickets in hand is always nice. Sometimes wickets in hand in 2020 cricket isn't always the best thing, because what tends to happen is you leave it to somebody else. And I think it's so important that if you're in and you get in, you can think, oh, well, we've got pin in the hutch, but I've actually got to take responsibility, because it's actually harder to get in on. And I've got to take responsibility to get our team over the line. And I think that's what Milan's done brilliantly so far in his career, because when you look at his career stats, he's got 10 in 19 innings, he's got 10 50s, 100 in 19 innings. He's had one single figure score in that 19 innings. But batting up number three, he's got his team over the line three not outs. He's had three not outs. I think he's had 103 not out, 54 not out, and a 99 not out. What that tells me is he's got experience because of his age and the amount of cricket he's played, but he's also, yeah, doesn't leave it to anybody else. He takes responsibility, puts his hands up. He knows that in these situations, it's very difficult when you need 9, 10, 11, 12 and over. It's very difficult to hit sixes from ball one. And I think he identifies that moment. He did it brilliantly in this game. Understood the bowler he was going to go for. And I think the sign of an experienced side who has played a lot of cricket, one day cricket especially, was England understanding who was the bowler that needed to go, what actually over it needed he needed to go in, and then he executed it perfectly. They did it to Hendricks in Cape Town. They did it to, I think, Ngidi in Paul, and they did it to Sampala this afternoon. A big over, coming on, young, inexperienced. He's the one that's got to go. He's first ball for six, and the rest is history, as I say.
2008, that game was. You didn't actually play. Your brother did. Albie Morkel needed... Durham needed 38 off of three overs, and Albie Morkel did it, so you won with an over to spare. It was ridiculous.
Try to think out which is the guy. I'm getting my game mixed up. No, that, I remember I got five at Old Trafford, and Albie played in it, and he got us over the line that year, so it might have been the year
Maybe he did it twice.
He did, yeah.
I tell you what, whilst we scratch our heads and work it out, let's hear from Darwin Milan talking to Neil Manthorpe following that second T20 win for England.
A masterclass of timing, I suppose. I mean, that was... You were 25 off 29 balls at one stage, and people were wondering whether you were a bit behind the rate.
Well, I thought I was a bit behind the rate, actually. I thought I was messing that game up properly. I think with the boundary, with the wind, there was always an option to take it down. There was always an option where you had to be able to target. I think that's key in a chase. You're always one over away. It's one over of 20-odd, and the game changes on its head. So you, with the power that we have in this team and the batting lineup that we have, we believe that we're always one over away from winning the game. And it turned out today that that's the way it worked.
Well, you looked very calm, but you just sort of implied there that perhaps... You thought it may have been getting away from you.
Yeah, look, that's one of my strengths. I try to stay in the moment. I try not to look too far ahead or what's happened. If I start looking at what my strike rate is and where I'm at, you know, I lose touch of the game. I lose sight of what's happening in the game. So, you know, I look at what's required, whether we need a big over, who's the guy to take down, and back myself when I get to that I'll be able to do it. Obviously, if I get out, I'll obviously stuff the game up a little bit, but I back myself with the amount of cricket that I've played in 2020 cricket, the experience that I have, to be able to do that when it's needed.
With so many fiery pyrotechnic batsmen, so much power in the rest of the order, do you have to sort of rein yourself in? I mean, you're the only one that I think can play that sort of an innings.
No, look, I think all the boys can. I think the mantra that we have is we want to take the game on at all times. Some of the boys do that slightly easier than I do, especially to start with. But, you know, that's something that I'm working on and something that I'm trying to improve on. But, you know, all I really want to do is be there at the end and win games. So I'm disappointed I wasn't there to finish that off. But, you know, it was good to get the win in the end.
It's refreshing to hear such honest candour from Darwin Milan. But it does raise the point, doesn't it? Okay, it worked that time, but you really leave yourself open to criticism if in a semi-final or a final of a World T20 you soak up three overs of an innings with, you know, the likes of Stokes or Morgan or Butler on the sidelines, and then you get out.
Yeah, but I think if you put yourself in a position enough times, you can, you know, from an experience point of view, all of a sudden you can put pressure on the opposition just by being there. All of a sudden, England get quarter final or semi final against Africa, and David Milan's in and he chews up 10 balls, and all people will say, well, pressure's on. But South Africa know by experience that he can still get them, he can still get his team over the line. And I think when you look at players around the world who have built the reputation of being a good finisher, built the reputation of being somebody like Josh Butler's the same, he can chew up balls. Ben Stokes can chew up balls, but you know for a fact that if you don't get them early, they can make up as and when the innings goes on. So there's all well and good saying you can dig yourself into a hole, but your reputation soon gets away from gets around the world when you do get your team over the line time after time, and then that puts teams on a back foot. People then start to think, right, if we don't get them in the first 10 balls, then all of a sudden, he can be dangerous at the back end. And that there, having a reputation like that, especially in the modern day game, could be huge.
Will it be a problem? I'm just Googling now. How much cricket has Milan played in India? I'm not sure he's played a great deal.
Imagine he'll played a great deal in India. Born and brought up in South Africa, in Cape Town. Used to the warm weather, not quite as warm as what it will be in India.
Well, he made his debut at Bowland Park. Yeah. As a 16-year-old, first game of first-class cricket, Bowland Park.
And you see how that was a wicket which was quite slow, low and turgid. It's a very, very slow, low wicket. Not too dissimilar to the subcontinent. Yeah, look, once he's got confidence of playing all around the world, and he's got the reputation of being the number one 2020 batsman in the world, by the time he gets to India, if he's in the form he's in now, it doesn't matter where he's playing or what he's playing on. People are going to be worried about David Milan, and David Milan's not going to be worried about anything other than trying to get runs for England, because he always think, bring the next game on, because when you're on the crest of a wave, you want to play every single day.
And what about the players on the outside looking in? We came into this asking a few questions. Certainly Bairstow and Milan have answered the questions about the batting. So I think, as you say, that's it now, isn't it? You're going to have one reserve, maybe Joe Root coming in for Sam Billings, possibly, or Billings will retain his place. But aside from that, it's about Ali. Does he come in for one of Curran or Jordan on occasion? And how does Mark Wood? I mean, suddenly it doesn't look like Mark Wood gets into that side unless Archer's injured.
Yeah, but I think it's a nice problem I have. If you look at the squad as a whole, you're probably looking at the 11 that's played in the three games. You are looking at Mark Wood, who will definitely go as that backup fast bowler. You're definitely going to take Moeen Ali, because you're going to hopefully try and get him into the team. And I would imagine it will be Joe Root is the spare batsman, stroke spare spinner. I think they'll go down that road and potentially play. I don't see where Joe fits into it. Again, do you want to be taking Joe Root into a world competition before the Ashes? Depending on his workload and how the summer goes, I think that will be the key contributing factor, whether they go in with that. But if I'm picking my best 15 and being selfish, like Owen Morgan has been in this tournament, in this three-match series, I think I'd be taking Joe Root into India. So there's 14. And it'll be whether I take Chris Wokes or Sam Billings and take another batting option if I need some more firepower, which, to be fair, other than the 14 names I've just mentioned there, I could go as a 15th man. I don't think it matters, because that person's not playing.
That's the voice of Steve Harmison. Still to come on the show, we're going to have a look ahead to the ODI series, which gets underway on Friday on TalkSport 2, which is what you're listening to. And this is the Cricket Collective.
Watching as Wokes goes in, takes the edge, caught behind Johnny Bairstow.
Driven down the ground by the clock, straight back over the bowler's head, onto the side screen for six more.
Ngidi into him again, that's another six. He's sliced it over backward point. That's outrageous. How do you do that, Moeen Ali?
Here's Stokes once again, bowls.
Bowls to massive six. John snaps into the second tier.
Rashid in from the Pinner's River end, and he gets his man. Bavuma is bowled.
Hendricks is it. Oh, goodness me. Jason Roy has just run down the track and has pinned his ears back and swatted it back over long on for six.
Yeah. Comes in, he's done.
knocked over Brendan Clark. Of course he should be bowling. Owen Morgan, World Cup winning captain. Who would question his judgment?
So, England taking the three-match T20 series 3-0, winning against South Africa by 9 wickets. David Malan ending up 99 not out, and Jos Buttler 67. The two combining for an unbroken second-wicket partnership of a lot, chasing down 191, or rather, chasing down 192. After South Africa posted 191 for 3. Faf du Plessis with a 50 and Van der Dussen with 74. Let's turn our attention to the ODI series. Harmy gets underway on Friday on TalkSport 2. Starts at 10. Match begins at 11. Now, of course, England are weakened. No Ben Stokes, no Jofra Archer, no Sam Curran. All three would have played for sure. Maybe not Sam Curran, but certainly the first two. So let's look at the side and the contest as a whole. The squad is as follows. Owen Morgan, the captain. Moeen Ali, who didn't play in the 3 T20 series. Johnny Bairstow, Sam Billings, Butler, Tom Curran, Lewis Gregory, Liam Livingston, two new guys. That's a youngster, Joe Root. I'm not sure much about him. He comes into the squad. Adil Rashid, Jason Roy, Ollie Stone, Chris Wokes, Rhys Topley, Mark Wood. How are you expecting England to line up in that first ODI?
Well, I don't see there being a massive amount of change when it comes to the way they have gone from the summer. I think Sam Billings deserves his place in the side. You're probably going to see Jos Buttler back down the order. He'll possibly come in at number 5 behind Owen Morgan, potentially going up to number 4, Root at 3, Bairstow and Roy going back to their usual partnership. See, the two spin twins will probably play in Moeen and Adil. And then you'll have Wokes, Curran and Wood. And I think if Owen Morgan is true to form, the way he's gone in the T20s, he'll play his best 11 first. And I think that's the way it would be. So the likes of Ollie Stone, Lewis Gregory, Liam Livingston and Rhys Topley would probably miss out on selection, but I would like to see at some point Ollie Stone get a go, whether it's in Parle or even in the back to Newlands in the third T20, third 50 over game, because I think this kid, Ollie Stone, is somebody I think England could use in the Southern Hemisphere over the course of the next two winters, whether it is in India or the UAE, whichever that way where that goes, and I think he could be a little an outside chance of being involved in the Ashes in Australia because of the pace that he bowls at. He bowls at good pace. He hits a deck reasonably hard, and he's somebody who likes to get the ball through in not quite as fast as Archer and Wood, but somebody who has got probably more pace than the likes of the two Currans and Chris Wokes. So that's the way I see England lining up. I don't see there being too many changes from the batting and the batting unit, unless Owen Morgan wants to give somebody a rest. But the way it looks is it Johnny Bairstow and Jos Buttler have been in the IPL. If he wants to give them a rest, he would have sent them home. Joe Root's got to play. Jason Roy's got to try and find a bit of form in Owen Morgan's captain. So really, there's only one place, and that's Sam Billings' place. Sam Billings was fantastic throughout the summer. So the batting top six seems to going to be settled. Moeen Ali at 7 and Chris Wokes at 8. So I don't see there being too much of a change of we're going to give people a game, because the 50-over World Cup is a long way away. I think it's still going to be we have got 15 strong players here. I'm going to pick the best 11 to win a cricket match and do that throughout the series.
Where are you on the Jason Roy conundrum? He didn't score many runs again today. I mean, Owen Morgan is fiercely, defensive and loyal. But let's not forget, Roy was dropped in a major tournament in 2017, Champions Trophy. Came back, he won the World Cup 2019. But he's had a lean run of scores, hasn't he? He is a little bit boom and bust, we know that. But do you see any... they're going to stick with him for the foreseeable, you would have thought.
I think they'll stick with him for the foreseeable, for the simple fact is I don't see them having anybody else really that's going to go and open a bat in this group, whether Livingston could go in first. I'm not so sure. I think Liam Livingston's more of a middle order player, but like, you've got to take your chance wherever you find it presented. And Owen Morgan has been very protective of Jason Roy more than anybody else when it comes to the batting, I think. I think he likes Roy. He trusts Roy, and I think he likes Roy to go in first. So I can see Jason Roy getting all the way through this series and through the English summer, and possibly to the T20 World Cup. And if he's still having a struggle during up into and during the T20 World Cup, I think then there could be a position up for grabs. But for me at this minute in time, I'd stick with Roy. I think he's done a good job for his country. And when you are going through a tough time, but you are playing, your team's winning, you look to your captain for some support. I think that's where Owen Morgan's at his strongest. And I think if he does back up Jason Roy, I think he'll get rewarded for it.
And what about South Africa then? I mean, they're going to be very relieved to see the likes of Archer and Stokes depart. Less so to see the likes of Joe Root and Chris Wokes come back the other way, and knowing that Mark Wood's going to play, well, hopefully, or possibly all three games.
Yeah, I don't see England being even though they're sending Archer and Stokes home, like we've said many times throughout the on TalkSport 2, throughout the coverage, that out of the 13 players that are out there, you could pick any 11, and I don't think England will be weakened too much. So I think England are still going to be very, very strong when it comes to the side that they're going to play. South Africa, they're just looking to find a way of getting through this indifferent patch with the white ball. They've got a lot of politics going on off the field. They've got a captain who's not a captain and doesn't look... And I've got... I think Quinton de Kock is a fantastic cricketer. I think he is a fantastic guy. He seems a good guy to have around. He seems to be a good person in that dressing room. I think he's very, very popular. I don't think he should be captain of South Africa. I think there's people that just sometimes who just aren't suited to the job. You listen to him in interview and it's nothing against him. He's just not a very good public speaker. He seems to be shy in front of the camera. He doesn't seem to want to do the media. That's nothing against the guy. I think there's a lot of people like that. I just think South Africa would be better suited having somebody else in charge and saying to Quinton de Kock, that white thing there, when you're in the field, catch it. When you're batting, clear your mind, don't worry about anything else. And when that white thing comes at you, head it as far as you possibly can. He does that for Mumbai Indians brilliantly. And I think while he is captain of South Africa, I just think they are taking a lot of their power out of their performance because of what's going through Quinton de Kock's mind. I think that's a big thing for South Africa, and I think they could do with rectifying that very, very quickly. Where they go, I'm not so sure, but I wouldn't be bothered. If I was in the South African camp, I wouldn't be bothered who captained the team. If it's having a negative effect on his performance and his thought processes, and he's not very comfortable in what's going on around it, then I think it needs to change very, very quickly for South Africa to be a force.
And, of course, no Kagiso Rabada either. He's been ruled out. He's got an abductor problem. So, the problems just seem to be mounting up again for South Africa. I mean, they've always got problems, though, haven't they?
They've always got problems, whether it's, you know, picking a side, whether it's off the field and the politics that goes with South African cricket. I've had a sample size of it playing there domestically. And it is interesting. It is different. And that's what people have got to remember when people listening to this show talking about how South Africa sometimes looks a shambles. South Africa has always looked a shambles from the outside because of what goes on the inside that people aren't privy to. So it's hard to predict what's going to happen. It's hard to predict what sort of side they're going to have. The one thing they have got, they've got some fine cricketers. They have got some fantastic cricketers. And if they can get them working in the right order and as a team, like we've seen in the first test match and Boxing Day out in Pretoria, when they looked a proper side, everybody was on the feeling good factor. Graham Smith was back in charge. Mark Boucher was there. That honeymoon period's over now, and it's about South Africa getting together as a group and a unit and as one to really having a force as an international team, because individually some fantastic players, but as a collective unit they look as though they're a little bit raggy at this moment in time, and that comes from the top, comes from leadership, and I think it's something that Graham Smith has to address very, very quickly.
Absolutely. No such problems for England, though. But where are we as we come to the end of the show? Where are we? Where is England with 50-over cricket? We've rested our best players. There's no World Cup for 4 years. It's all about the T20s. We were only celebrating winning the thing last year.
Yeah, and I think the 50-over win in 2019 was there's a lot more sadness than this from the pandemic point of view. But I think it would have been great to, really, when you talk about in your time, in my time, 2005, celebrating Trafalgar Square, seeing all them people, that should have been England last year. Their Trafalgar Square was going round every single test international ground in England last year, full crowds parading the World Cup trophy. They've never really had a chance to celebrate them doing that, and I think that's something that England now have to go around the world now proving that they are the best team in the world. They are world champions, and I think it's important that they keep going that way. You can look at 3.5 years' time, and sometimes you can get carried away, and sometimes you can actually have a negative effect if you turn around and say, well, in 3 years' time, such and such is going to be 35, such and such is going to be 34, such and such is going to be 36. Forget that. Just look after the moment. 3 years' time will look after itself. If you've got a winning team, it's very easy to bring 22, 23-year-olds into a winning side. And I think that's what Owen Morgan is trying to do. He's done that with a 2020 team, and I think he'll do that with a 50-over team as well. So I do not see there being too much of an issue with the 50-over side.
Brilliant stuff. Army, you'll be back on Friday. Live coverage of the first of three ODIs on TalkSport 2 gets underway at 10 o'clock. Thanks for listening to the Cricket Collective.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.